Hello and welcome to this week's Inside Education, the programme that brings you the best from the world of education from an Irish perspective. You're welcome to get involved with the programme through Twitter, at InsideEd, by email to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie and through the website insideed.com. If you have an education event or topic that is of interest, please let me know and I may cover it on a future programme. And there's a packed programme ahead this week, of course. We'll hear about a religious education congress that is taking place on Saturday next, the 18th of October, and we'll hear about a conference on diversity in teacher education that's taking place on Friday, the 24th of October. But this week is Maths Week, and that's where we begin. I have been speaking to Sheila Dunnigan of Waterford Institute of Technology, who is one of the main organisers of Maths Week. When I spoke to Sheila, I first asked her to tell me what is the purpose of Maths Week.
The purpose of Maths Week is to promote maths, to develop a positive attitude towards maths among everybody in Ireland, and to show people that maths is something that we use every day of our lives.
And how did it come about?
Well, it started 9 years ago. Myself and my colleague Owen Gill in Waterford Institute of Technology. We run CalMaths, which is a science, technology, engineering outreach centre. And Owen's an engineer and I'm a chemist. And Owen was promoting engineering and I was promoting chemistry. And we found that an awful lot of the people that we met were saying things like they didn't want to do engineering or science because they didn't like maths. And we began to realise that there was a negative attitude towards maths, so we just decided to try and do something about it, and that was nine years ago in May. And at the time, we contacted Fiacra O'Carbra in Maynooth and Starta Sen in Trinity because we knew that they were doing maths outreach at the time. And in May, we said, well, if we all did something together in October during the week of Hamilton Day, we'd call it a maths week and we'd kind of see what happens. And that was, the three of us decided to do it in May, and by the time actually October came, we had 10 partner centres involved, and it's just taken off from there.
It is, because everyone is talking about it now, this year even. And where do you think this negative attitude to maths comes from?
I don't really know. I mean, I think people think that maths can be hard, and yes, it can be hard, but it's very rewarding and very challenging. And a lot of people, when they try something, well, they give it up. But if, you know, they tried it a bit harder, and if they had belief in themselves and belief that they could do it, I think then we would have a much more positive attitude to maths, because the reality is we all do use maths every day and we all can do maths. So it's about developing a belief in ourselves and believing that we can do it and that we do it.
And one of the focus of this programme is on what schools can do in Maths Week. So what kind of activities do they do around the country?
Well, just to clarify, actually there are things for adults and the public as well. It's not just for schools, although schools have really embraced it and have developed a huge range of activities. There's lots of schools, primary schools in particular, doing maths trails. People are having maths quizzes. We've a school who's actually making maths biscuits in the home economics class, so which is great. We have maths and art. An awful lot of schools also, the older classes are helping either younger classes in the same school or a primary school are going to a secondary school for the secondary school children to help them with maths. So it's very much a community-based activity.
And who funds Maths Week, Sheila?
We have a number of sources of funding. The Department of Education in the Republic and the Department of Education in Northern Ireland fund us, because Maths Week is an all-Ireland event. We also have some sponsorship from the SFI Discover programme, from DSB, Xilinx and CRH.
And I found it interesting as well, Sheila, that you said that your own background is actually as a chemist, and Owen, the other founder and organiser of Maths Week, is an engineer. So, I mean, maths, it's just so fundamental for so many areas of work, so many careers.
That's right. I mean, there's so many people using maths in their careers that actually haven't studied maths at higher level, from financial services to computers, economics, marketing, all of the sciences. There's probably an awful lot more that I'm not even mentioning here.
Yeah, and your own interest in maths, where did that come from?
I think, well, being a chemist, you have to, I suppose, be able to think numerically and to try and figure out things. And I used to, from a very early age, I used to like trying to figure out things. Sometimes I could do it, sometimes I couldn't. But just by, I suppose, by trying to figure things out, and from that, studying chemistry, I suppose, then I just began to like maths. The kind of chemistry I do is physical chemistry, which is the more mathematical side of chemistry. So I guess really from there.
And there wasn't a particular teacher who inspired you or who made it easier to understand?
I did. I actually, I suppose I'm showing my age here, when I was doing my intercert, I had a great maths teacher who really got me into maths. And I suppose it's really from that.
I mean, it's interesting there as well that you said about, you know, sometimes you can solve the problems and sometimes you can't. I think it's to be able to have that persistence that you can stick with it when, you know, even if you are struggling.
I think that's really important, because it's important that not to give up, and not just in maths, but I suppose in everyday life, that you come across challenges and you have to try and try a bit harder. But there's nothing more rewarding than when you have worked out the challenge and you've got it right, and you know you've got it right. You get a great buzz from that.
That's true, that's true. What is your own favourite area of mathematics?
I don't really have a favourite. I suppose I like algebra, if I had to pick one.
Okay, and getting back then to Maths Week, Sheila, it's Wednesday now. What kind of activities are coming up for the rest of the week?
Well, there's lots of activities all over the country. Tomorrow there's the Hamilton Walk, which retraces the footsteps of Hamilton walking along the canal.
And for people who don't know who Hamilton was, can you just maybe just briefly say?
Hamilton was probably Ireland's most famous mathematician. He lived in Dunsink Observatory, where he's the Astronomer Royal, and he was walking along the canal one day, and he scratched an equation at Broome Bridge, which was the equation for quaternions. And that's what makes, I suppose, Hamilton very famous. He did an awful lot of work in other areas of maths as well, but he would be, I suppose, most known for that.
Okay, and I interrupted you there when you were talking about the other events for the rest of the week.
Yeah, we've, on Sunday in the Botanic Gardens, we have a family fun day of maths. When we're teaming up with the Botanic Gardens Pumpkin Festival, we're also teaming up with the worldwide celebration of Martin Gardner, who was probably one of the world's best maths popularizers. It's a worldwide event, so we are doing an event on Sunday for that. On Saturday in Belfast, we're going to be doing Maths in the City, where at the Ulster Hall we're going to have lots of puzzles. On Friday in the National Concert Hall for senior cycle students, we have a trio of mathematicians, Matt Parker, Andrew Jeffrey and Steve Humble, giving a master class for second level students.
It sounds like there's a lot going on there. If someone wants to find out more about it, what is your website, Sheila?
The website is www.mathsweek.ie, and all the events are listed there.
Well, it sounds like there's something for everyone in Maths Week this year, and I'll put a link to the Maths Week website on the programme's website, which is insideed.com. You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Next, we find out about a Congress on Religious Education that is taking place on Saturday, the 18th of October, in Mater Dei Institute of Education in Dublin. Sing a New Song is the theme of the Congress, and I spoke to one of the organisers, Elaine Mahan, and I first noted that the Religious Education Conference had been held in 2009, 2011, 2013, and I wondered why the biennial conference was now becoming an annual event.
Yeah, well, some people say it's madness. We say it's the gift of zeal of the Holy Spirit. I'm not quite sure, one or the other. We did it every 2 years because we're a voluntary committee, and there's just a massive amount of work involved in organising, you know, a couple of hundred people. So we kind of did it every other year for a long while, as you say. But then last year we held the conference in Mater Dei. There was just a great buzz, great excitement. There's also just a lot going on in religious education at primary and post-primary level. And we're kind of the only group that specifically provides kind of in-service or continuing professional development for teachers in this area. So we kind of said, well, sure, go on. The enthusiasm is there and the topics are there to be spoken about. So that's why we went ahead this year and kind of did it when we should technically be on an off year.
And when you say there's a lot going on in religious education at primary and post-primary level, what kind of things are you thinking about?
Well, at primary level, I think, Minister Quinn gave us a lot to think about in terms of just the nature, obviously, of Catholic schools, but also about religious education and how that's done in Catholic schools. Things around inclusivity are really important, and they're important things that, maybe teachers wouldn't have, heretofore, had to deal with in their classroom. So that's one of the things at primary level. Also at primary level, there's a new curriculum for Catholic primary schools coming in this year, and it's the first curriculum in a long, long time. There'll be a new programme based on that new curriculum, which will eventually replace the Alive-O programme, and that's been used in Catholic primary schools since 1996. So we're definitely in a need for a change there. So that's kind of having a primary. A post-primary level, I think, just with the change with the junior cert, going to the junior cycle award, student award, it brings up a lot of questions around religious education in terms of, core subjects, long courses, short courses. And in the context of a Catholic school, and I suppose that's primarily what we're looking at in this Congress, where does religious education fit in? So if you're a Catholic school, should you have a kind of preferential option, if you like, for religious education in your school? And what are the, what are the implications of that, I suppose, for your school community? So obviously that'll then have impact for senior cycle as well. So it's all go at the moment in terms of religious education in schools.
And if we go back to primary for a moment, you said there's a new programme coming in. What can you tell us about that new programme?
Yeah, so I'm actually one of the people who's involved. There's a number of us involved in the team in writing it. But it's due to come out next September, please God. Junior infants and senior infants will be out. First and second class then the following year, third and fourth the following year, and fifth and sixth the year after that. People say to me, what's the big change? What's going to be different between this and Alive-O? And what's different is that we have a curriculum. The curriculum has been sanctioned by the Irish bishops and has been sent to Rome, and we've already received feedback on it, so please God we'll get sanction on it from Rome as well. And it's kind of built on these kind of four strands, which is around Christian faith, scripture, morality and liturgy and prayer. So I suppose there's a content there. There's strands and strand units, and people can very easily see kind of what they're trying to do in religious education. There's also skills that are being developed in through the programme, skills of interreligious literacy, skills of spiritual literacy. And these are things, it's not that they weren't present in Alive-O, but perhaps they're more explicit in this programme. So that's kind of the big change for the new programme. So yeah, it's called Grow and Love, and the first two programmes will be out, as I say, next September.
And at post-primary level, religious education is now a Leaving Cert subject, isn't that right?
Yeah.
How is that being taken up so far?
Take up at primer at a junior cycle rather is very high. It was around 50 or even more, up to 56% in recent years of students taking that. Senior cycle is much, much lower. I can't tell you the actual numbers now off the top of my head, but it's certainly less than 1,000, could be even closer to 500. So the uptake is low, comparatively maybe to other subject areas. But I always think, the quality of religious education and that these students are coming out with, these 500 or so students, is really beyond, to be honest, what I would have done, maybe in an undergraduate degree, certainly in the first couple of years of an undergraduate degree in theology or religious studies or anything else. And a lot of those students, not all of them, but a lot of them go on maybe to be RE teachers or to do something else in the area of religion or theology. So it's a really good course. It's very extensive, as all Leaving Cert subjects are. So small uptake, but really, really good quality.
You also mentioned the importance of inclusivity in schools nowadays. How can an inclusive religious education curriculum manage to be both inclusive and to promote Catholic religious education?
But I wish I had a short answer for you because it'd make my job much easier. But I think the main thing that we're trying to say is that if we are a Catholic school and if we're doing Catholic religious education, well, then we always have to not only acknowledge, but in fact learn from the other faith traditions that are present in our classroom. And actually at the Congress, we have a really, really experienced person, Aveen Mullally, who is involved both in the Merino Institute, but also with the National Council for Curriculum Assessment around looking at religious education in diversity. And she's doing a really good workshop, because I've heard part of it before, called Looking in the Mirror, which is about the inclusion of other faiths in Catholic primary schools. And I think we're really conscious of the need to, as I said, not only acknowledge the presence of these children in our classroom, but to have them involved in religious education, in fact to learn from them. So it can be a difficult task. It's a delicate task. It requires an amount of sensitivity, but a really important thing that we're adamant needs to be done, and done well.
You've mentioned Aveen's workshop this year. What other topics are under discussion at the conference this year?
Well, as I said, we really make a big effort to have a balance between primary and post-primary. So around primary schools, the things that are especially popular at the moment is Godly Play, which is kind of a methodology of religious education. That's a workshop being hosted by Kate Cavanagh and Cora O'Farrell. We also have things around development and missionary education. I'm actually doing a workshop myself with one of my co-authors, Dan O'Connell, about the primary RE programme. So that's kind of the primary end of it. And post-primary, again, things that are really hot button issues around theology of the body, so kind of relationship sexuality education, things around music and kind of resources for that. We've a workshop as well on the UCAT, on the Youth Catechism, by Gerard Gallagher from the Archdiocese of Dublin, and also a workshop about religion in cyberspace, so kind of, you know, IT and religious education. There's also an excellent workshop, which I'm looking forward to going to myself, by Sean Gowan, who teaches out in Blackrock College, about religious education and kind of where it's heading in post-primary schools. So good range there between primary and post-primary. It's also stuff kind of for the teachers themselves, stuff about cosmology, about scripture, about mindfulness. So again, a little something for everybody, we hope.
And finally, Elaine, I might just ask you to say a little bit about the keynote speaker this year. Who is that?
I will, certainly. It's Michael Paul Gallagher, who's a Jesuit, who we actually heard, a few of us went to a talk that he gave in Gardiner Street Parish. Just were really taken by his use of imagery, particularly when talking about Pope Francis, and encouraging us all to learn from Pope Francis and to be more like him, rather than to just sit on the sidelines and say, oh, sure, isn't he great? So the theme of the Congress is, in fact, kind of inspired by that. It's actually a line from one of the readings of the weekend. It's Sing a New Song. So we know that we have a song to sing as religious educators, and we know that we want to invite and involve other people to sing it with us. And Francis is certainly showing us a new way, a positive way, an attractive way of doing that. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to the keynote.
So both primary and post-primary teachers will be in attendance?
Yes, absolutely. And the application date has technically passed, but we're still welcoming. We still have some space. Matter Day have been very gracious in giving the Institute for us for the day, so we're able to accept a few more signees. So anybody who'd like to sign up, the website address is www.recongress.ie or recongress.ie. So you can go there and find all the details.
And you'll have to do that before this Saturday, because that conference is on in Mater Dei on Saturday, the 18th of October. Finally this week, I found out about a conference that is taking place on Friday, the 24th of October. The conference is on the topic of diversity in initial teacher education. Dr. Elaine Keane and Dr. Manuela Hines are the principal investigators on a study of the same name. I met up with them and asked Elaine to tell me about the study.
Well, I suppose it's a big national research project. DITE stands for Diversity in Initial Teacher Education. We're very kindly supported and funded by the Irish Research Council. It's been in the work for several years. I suppose the project builds on my own previous research and publications in the area of widening access and participation in higher education, and on my colleague Manuela's very important work on initial teacher education and trends therein. And I suppose our overall aim in the study is to gather and analyse background data, which has been lacking very much on a national level, from all applicants and entrants to initial teacher education programmes in Ireland, looking at the kind of socio-demographic profile, incorporating a whole range of dimensions of diversity, as well as their motivations to become a teacher and their kind of more educational experiences more generally. So we're doing this through the implementation of a voluntary anonymous online questionnaire that we're envisaging implementing on a multi-annual basis. We're in our second implementation now. The first year we implemented it through the Postgraduate Application Centre with all postgraduate, post-primary initial teacher education programmes. And we have just now come through the second implementation, and we were, with the support of the Irish Research Council, we were able to extend that to include almost all initial teacher education programmes in the country, including those through the CAO. And we're very, very grateful to our partners in this process, the PAC and the CAO, for their help. I suppose one of the other key features of it, and what makes our project relatively unique even in an international context, is with the support of the Irish Research Council funding, we were able to work with Niall O'Leary, a consultant here in Dublin, to develop an anonymised system that essentially allows us in a very unique way to track applicants to entrants and to ascertain if there's a difference between those who are applying and those who actually get to enter.
And what have you learned so far about the diversity of the applicants and those who are accepted into the programmes?
That is, I guess, the next
Sorry, Manuela.
Stage. Yeah, this one. This is really what we are trying to get to. In the first implementation, we actually hadn't developed that system yet, so we were able to implement the survey post offers. So we're always talking about people apply, then they receive their offers, and our aim was always to survey them before they receive their offers. However, that didn't materialize in our first implementation because we hadn't developed that system. So really, at the moment, we can't really say anything about the difference between applicants and entrants. That is going to be the next stage of the project. We will be able to say something about that very soon, in only probably a month or 2 months' time, because we're actually at the moment adding the offer outcome, or the application outcome as we call it, to our survey data. So we have all our survey data collected through the CAO and through PAC, and now we're identifying who did receive an offer and accepted it, and who received no offer, and who received an offer and did not accept it. So eventually we will be able to do this comparison. At the moment, we rely on data that really describes pretty much only the entrance profiles. And there has been some research in that area in the past. Colleagues of ours in Dublin, Sheila Drody and Maureen Colevi, have been looking at the backgrounds of primary student teachers. And there was also colleagues, including Marie Clark, Anne Lodge and Michael Shevlin, who have been looking at the background variables describing postgraduate, post-primary student teachers. My PhD research also focused on this area, the student teacher population in Ireland is quite homogenous in respect of some of the often researched diversity variables. One of the most obvious and most discussed background characteristic is teachers' gender, and Ireland is no exception there, among other OECD or developed countries, in that we see a predominance of female applicants and entrants to teacher education at all levels, and this predominance is more pronounced again at primary level.
Okay, the very fact though that you're studying the diversity must mean that there is a concern about this, or that there's a reason to focus on it. Why is that important?
Well, I suppose the justification comes from a number of different bases. Firstly, on a policy level, both policy documents from the HEA, from the DES and the Teaching Council itself have emphasised the need to diversify the teaching population for some time now. So it's very much been there on a policy level, but there have been no real moves on the ground to actually make any efforts in that direction. And of course, what's very important now from a policy level, even from the HEA's recent consultation document, is the need to have evidence-based policy development. And we really feel that we need a very strong evidence base in terms of data. And that's what we're hoping to contribute, I suppose, in an Irish context, is to find out, well, where we are, first of all, in terms of diversity in our teaching population and our ITE populations, before we can attempt to make any recommendations about what should be done to further diversify or not, for example. But of course, from a social justice perspective as well, what we're hoping to do is to improve the student experience in schools. We saw significant diversification of our schooling populations in the Celtic Tiger years. Significant diversification has remained. And as Manuela, my colleague there, mentioned earlier on, the teaching populations generally are quite homogenous, and this is an international phenomenon. It's certainly not just a national phenomenon. Now, we're not just talking, though, and this is an important point, it's not just about getting students from underrepresented and minority groups in. It's not that that is the kind of panacea for everything that is going on in terms of diversity in education. This is very much from a wider perspective that we feel that we need to also develop strategies to equip all teachers to be more culturally responsive in their teaching, to better benefit student learning on all grounds. So it's not just about getting students from underrepresented groups into teaching, although that is in itself a first step potentially, but it's much more about a culturally responsive teaching approach more generally in the teaching profession. But that's a slightly longer term aim, if you like.
So is the goal then in having a more diverse teaching population, is it in order to be more inclusive of all school leavers, or is it for the benefit of the students in the classroom that they will be teaching?
It's a really good point, and I suppose it's both.
Yeah.
We need to be a little bit careful by assuming that just by bringing people from diverse backgrounds into teaching, that is the panacea, as I said, because it doesn't necessarily follow. There's a lot of very good critical research about the pitfalls of assuming about, you know, role modelling and so on. Now, there is a lot of evidence there that it's also potentially positive, but it's not the cure-all. So we need to, it's about having a much more inclusive dialogue about who's in teaching, who's not, from an equity of access perspective for those groups who are underrepresented and for whom there may be barriers existing to their entry. But we need a much wider conversation as well about culturally responsive teaching methodologies on behalf of all teachers, working on the assumption that that will also, I suppose, benefit all pupils in schools. So there are two parts to it there, as you very rightly identified, Sean.
So we are talking about an equity too, but also equity through teacher education. And some researchers have used that very helpful terminology. So we have to think of what barriers might there be in place, and that might have to do with how we are representing the teaching profession, socializations of pupils already, and thinking about professional hierarchies, but also about selection criteria, for example, and what do we look at and how do we select applicants into teacher education. So that would be equity for applicants and potential applicants to enter the teaching profession, but also ultimately, and there has been research around the role model approach, but as well the socialization. What impact has it on students in schools to have quite a homogenous teaching population?
Okay, and how can you're going to be presenting your findings at a conference coming up in NUIG.
Yes.
How can people find out more about that conference?
They can email either of us. If they even just do a quick Google search of the DITE Research Seminar, DITE, at NUI Galway School of Education, or email either myself or Manuela. It's elaine.kane, K-E-A-N-E, at nuigalway.ie, or manuela.hines, H-E-I-N-Z, at nuigalway.ie. We'd be happy to give you more information. We're very excited to be welcoming Professor Lynetta Santoro from Strathclyde University in Glasgow. She's highly experienced in the Australian as well as now more recently the UK context on diversity in initial teacher education, and she also looks at what happens next when minority teachers go into the profession and issues to do with burnout and again those bigger, more critical questions about better preparing all teachers to work effectively for diversity, which is of course the bigger question that we're all really aiming towards.
And that's all we have time for on this week's programme. I'd like to thank my guests, Sheila Donegan, Elaine Mahon, Elaine Keane and Manuela Hines. If you'd like to feature an idea or an event on a future programme, you can write to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. You can listen to almost 200 podcasts of previous programmes on insideed.com. But until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney saying goodbye. Thank you for listening.